time for Ask an Expert. Every weekday at this time, we're giving you access to top experts in various fields related to the pandemic. Today, as COVID rules change across the country and around the world, it may be time to rethink travel. To answer your questions, we're joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Amish Adalja, senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. If you have a question, email us now, askus@kcbsradio.com. Doctor, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
So this is very timely because I'm a friend of my sister's who likes to travel and couldn't take it anymore, went to London last week, and we just found out over the weekend that she tested positive. So now she's stuck in London over there. And I was surprised to find out that there were no restrictions in keeping her in the hotel room. So it's kind of really a honor system. And there's no masking, and there were no requirements whatsoever over there. And I thought, well, how am I supposed to know if there isn't just going to be COVID floating around everywhere?
You have to assume with an endemic respiratory virus like COVID-19 that anytime you socially interact, there's always going to be a non-zero COVID risk. The virus is not going to disappear. It's going to become like many of our other respiratory viruses, and that risk is sort of baked in when you socially interact, that you're going to get respiratory illnesses.
Are there places around the world that are doing better, where you could travel to and feel pretty safe about not contracting COVID-19, even though you should probably still be, under the assumption that it could happen at any moment, you should be taking proper protocols?
Not really, and I don't think that's the right standard to set, because when you're talking about a virus that can't be eradicated or eliminated, it's going to be ubiquitous. And that's what it means when there's a virus that's endemic. Just like with influenza, there's no country that is free from influenza. There may be places that are hotspots at a given time, but there's always going to be some baseline transmission of COVID-19 going on in every country in the world.
So would you still feel comfortable, eating outside at a cafe in Paris, or, keeping your mask on if you're on a small tour bus inside?
Well, eating outside at a cafe is really not a real risk because COVID-19 does not transmit efficiently outside. So I don't think there's any real danger with that type of an issue unless you're all packed around each other. Most outdoor transmission events are very, very rare. I think when it comes to when you want to wear a mask, that's not one size fits all. It depends upon how much risk tolerance you have and how much you're willing to do to try and avoid an infection that everybody is going to get probably multiple times in their life. So I think that this is not something where you can kind of have one recommendation for everybody. It all depends. What is your risk factor for severe disease? Are you going to be tested afterwards? Are you vaccinated? Do you have access to Paxlovid? All of that plays a role in what level of risk is acceptable. But I think the thing is that 20 years from now, there'll still be COVID-19. And I don't think we will still be asking these questions because people will have acclimatized to that risk.
Now, mask wearing has been obviously contentious here in the U.S. Has that same debate occurred overseas in countries that have not really used masks to deal with, say, flu outbreaks?
It has been contentious in some of the European countries, probably not as contentious in the United States. But there definitely were protests regarding these types of issues and people not wearing them in other countries. I think it became highly politicized here. And I think that comes from the fact that sometimes when government issues mandates rather than recommendations, it just creates a lot more storm than if it was just a recommendation to wear masks. And I think that's probably one of the lessons here, is that in a country like the United States, recommendations are much more palatable to the population than government requirements.
So I want to go back to something you had mentioned about access to Paxlovid. So could I, if I was heading on a trip, get some and have it with me in case I do test positive overseas?
Well, we try to, Paxlovid, the data for Paxlovid working is in high-risk individuals. That's where it really has a major benefit. So if you're somebody that's above 65 or has a high-risk condition, it should be something that you think about getting immediately after you test positive. And I do think if you're traveling and you're in one of those high-risk categories, it might be something that you ask your primary care doctor to preemptively prescribe so you have it on hand. If not that, then I think you need to have a plan in place in case you do test positive.
So when it comes to travel, sounds like we have to take our own risk profile into account, make our own decisions. But are there some groups that it may not be beneficial for them to be traveling right now because they are at risk, or just because of their age, or because they're immunocompromised?
Well, any of those high-risk populations are going to have some exposure to COVID-19. So people who have transplants or immunocompromised, the very elderly, those types of people are still at high risk for severe disease. However, you have to know why they're traveling. Are they traveling just for fun, or are they traveling because they're going to visit some relative who they may not get to see? Is it something new? So everything is not, it's not going to be absolute yeses or noes. It's all going to be about harm reduction. So what is this event? Can it be done virtually? Can it not be done virtually? How important is it to you? What precautions can you take? Do you have a good mask? Can you do rapid tests? Do you have Paxlovid on hand? Have you been vaccinated? If you're immunocompromised, have you gotten Evusheld? All those play a role when you think about traveling. Just like when someone comes to me and they're going to travel somewhere and I have to talk to them about yellow fever risk or malaria risk, I go through all of that. So in many ways, this isn't something really new to infectious disease doctors, because we always counsel people on travel, especially high-risk people.
So what would you say to someone who was thinking about traveling for leisure, just for fun?
It depends on their risk factors for severe disease. If it's a 99-year-old person, I would be much more reticent than if it was a 19-year-old. But if it's a 99-year-old person who wants to go do something that they've never done before and this is the only chance they have to do it, I would say go do it and take precautions and use the tools that we have, knowing that there's going to be some risk that you can't completely reduce. I think this abstinence-only approach is not something that, you know, I've ever endorsed. I think it's all about harm reduction and meeting people where they are and looking at their values and then juxtaposing the risk of COVID-19 with those values.
Does it make much sense for travelers to pay attention to hospitalization rates and data like that from countries they are traveling to? Or does that not really matter when it comes to coming up with travel plans, because the timing is never going to be exact?
It may help you to understand how well something is under control there. And if you are to get sick with COVID, or if you get some other, maybe you have another medical problem and you might need hospitalization. And if the hospitals are overrun in a given country, that could play a role in going to that country. But I think it's important to remember that you don't need to travel to go to COVID. You can just go outside. You can just go to the nearest bar in your town. So lots of people talk about travel and COVID-19, but you can just travel down the block and get it if you want.
If you want, right? Or try not to. We're speaking with Dr. Hamish Adalich, a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Email us your questions at askus@kcbsradio.com. That's askus@kcbsradio.com. Doctor, we do have a number of questions. And one person asking, is the air in hotel rooms safe? Is there any way to ensure that there's proper ventilation?
Most hotels do have fairly good ventilation. It's not the same thing as being on an airplane where there's so many air exchanges per hour. It's not like being in a hospital where the air is exchanged. But in general, it's about probably similar to your house. It's not something that I think is a major danger when you're in that situation, versus many other places that you go to shopping centers, to malls, to movie theaters, to bars and restaurants. It's very similar to that.
Another listener question. I'm planning to travel this summer. Is it better to stay in an Airbnb or in a hotel when it comes to COVID?
I don't think there's any strong data to be able to say one or the other. Obviously, if you're really trying to avoid COVID, there's going to be less people at an Airbnb. It's likely just to be your party rather than at a hotel where there are going to be other people there. And then obviously there's a bar in the hotel, and that's a temptation where you might have a higher risk of COVID-19.
Another listener emails, is being outdoors maskless in big crowds still considered safe and almost zero risk when it comes to these new variants?
Generally, yes. I think the new variants increase contagiousness, but in general, outdoor transmission tends to be rare. Obviously, if you're at a political rally and you're all packed together, that's a different story, but most outdoor activities are going to be relatively safe compared to indoor activities, but there can be some outdoor activities where the risk rises, but probably not anywhere near what it is in an indoor situation.
Next question. On a 10-hour plane flight, how would you suggest unmasking to eat? Is there an optimal timing to remove your mask on a plane if you have to?
Well, I think it would be when the plane is flying. That's when all the air circulation stuff is going as at its optimal rate, where the number of air exchanges is the highest. So it would be when the plane has, you know, taken off, when it's not on the ground.
Another one, there are a number of airlines that have already dropped their mask requirements, but there are still requirements to get into the country. Where are we with regards to things like that?
We're stalled. I think that this is kind of another paradoxical thing we have where you have to test to come into the country, it really serves little value, especially when the United, like as I said, you can get COVID-19 just fine here in the United States. You don't need to have gone outside the country to get it. And it's also weird that if you drive across the border of Mexico and Canada, you don't have to be tested, but if you take a flight, you do. So there is a lot of paradox there, and I think it should be something that we end the entry testing.
What do you think about traveling with small kids? Obviously, you can, like you said, you can go down the block and you pick up COVID from going to the grocery store, but traveling with kids, they're all over the place, a little tougher to corral them. How do you feel about that?
I think it all depends on the risk tolerance. Children tend to be spared severe consequences of disease. Children under two don't really wear masks very well. So I think you have to think about, is your child at high risk for severe disease? Do they have asthma? Have they had some other medical problem? And then make that decision. And again, it's important to put it in context. The travel itself isn't any much of a higher risk than what's going on at the daycare center or at the local, the local trampoline park that your kid might be going to regularly as well.
Yeah, I freaking imagine a local trampoline park with them jumping up and down and breathing on each other would be risky, I suppose, than just taking them to the museum or something. If the kids would sit still for a museum, I suppose.
Yeah. Right. I think that there's this mystique about travel that somehow it increases your risk when it doesn't make sense when this virus is widespread in every country and in every location in the United States.
Well, but I think that some people feel like they just, if they're going to be sick, they don't really want to be that far away from home.
Yeah, that's a separate consideration, though. I think that yes, obviously, if you don't want to be stuck in another country waiting because the U.S. is going to require an entry test and all of that, then I think you have to put that into mind that you may be in another country for a couple of days or outside of your hometown for a couple of days, and that might not be fun. But I think the risk is not much appreciably higher when you travel than when you're at home.
Another listener question, Dr. Adalja, do you think it's safe to travel this year? Would you take a trip or would you wait until next year for something?
There's still going to be a COVID risk next year. And there's going to be a COVID risk the year after that. So I think it all depends upon your risk factors for severe disease. Are you vaccinated? Do you have high risk conditions? What is this trip? Is this something that you have to do now or is it something that you can put off? And I think maybe you might want to put it off for mitigation so there's less testing and protocols you have to go through. But in general, I think you have to realize that the post-pandemic world is never going to be 2019. It's always going to be a world when there's a baseline risk of COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. It's not going anywhere. And I think there's a lot of people in this country that where their mind has sort of thought of this as a hurricane, where it comes and it goes, and then everything's back to normal. And that's not the case.
So would you feel comfortable taking a trip right now?
Yeah, I'm flying next week. I have to give I have to give a lecture in South Carolina, yes.
Okay. Sometimes we like to ask the experts because it's like modeling.
And I've been on multiple trips and multiple plane flights since this pandemic began. Out of the country and in the country.
All right. Well, Dr. Adalja, we wish you safe travels next week. And as always, we greatly appreciate your insights with us here on KCBS. We've been joined live on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline by Dr. Amish Adalja, senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. And you can listen to the entire interview at kcbsradio.com. All of our Ask an Expert interviews are posted at kcbsradio.com/askanexpert or look under the More button at kcbsradio.com.